Welcome on back, folks, to ESPN West Palm today. As always, I'm your host, Mike Rizzo. And joining me now is a very special guest, Dr. Joshua S. Jew. He's an MD, a urological surgeon. How about that? I didn't get it wrong. Urological surgeon with Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm Beach, part of the Palm Beach Health Network, friend of show, too. Dr. Jew, second time joining us. So good to have you.
It's great to be back, Mike.
So let's first off explain to the audience again. You wear a lot of hats here. I mean, Doc, I had to ask you about your notes because, you do a lot for the Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm. Kind of explain what you kind of focus in, because I know you're a jack of all trades.
I try to. Well, when I did my training in Manhattan, I tried to focus on minimally invasive surgery for the kidney, bladder, and prostate. So I focus on robotic surgery. That's for like kidney masses, suspicious kidney masses, kidney cancer, also prostate cancer. And then also while I was up in Manhattan, learned all the new minimally invasive surgical treatments for kidney stones as well as enlarged prostate. So that's more of my wheelhouse.
Dr. Jew is our guest, a urological surgeon with the Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm Beach. Now, explain the robotic stuff to me, because I'm such a nerd. If it's anime, if it's comic books or any stuff like that, I'm very in the robotic stuff. How does that kind of translate into the medical world? Is it nonetheless just you looking at a computer and controlling the robot by yourself, or is it something that's just there sitting there assisting you?
Well, it'd be nice if the robots were advanced enough to do the surgeries.
Well, you wouldn't have a job, right? You wouldn't have a job, but
I'd be at the beach, and then the robots would be doing the surgery.
Not too bad, right?
But a lot of things are robot-assisted, which means that, you know, the classic way of doing surgery with instruments, a scalpel and, cutting, sewing, a lot of that, especially within urology, is starting to fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. So one of the large advancements was endoscopic surgery. That's been around for a couple decades now,
right.
But basically everything going through the urinary tract. Obviously, when that's not possible, then there was the invention of laparoscopic surgery, which is now more commonly replaced by robotic surgery. So that's where you have robotic arms or some large machines that hold different laparoscopic instruments. This is usually in regards to big kidney surgeries, big prostate surgeries. But then there's also other types of robots now that will harness artificial intelligence to actually help identify obstructing prostate tissue and use a lot of different imaging modalities and knowledge and information from prior surgeries to help optimize the current surgeries and future surgeries. So that's where it seems like surgery is headed, really loaded with technology now. And it's very exciting because patients are able to have less invasive surgeries, more advanced surgeries, more detailed surgeries, and a lot of that's translating to improved outcomes as well.
So I was a little far off with the robots that I'm used to watching in my animes and my cartoons. But we should figure out a patent for that. Then we can hang out at the beach.
That'd be great.
Long. Yeah, but Joshua S. Jew, Dr. Joshua S. Jew, an MD and a urological surgeon with the Good Samaritan Medical Center is our guest here. They're located in West Palm Beach, part of the Palm Beach Health Network. Now, I talked to Dr. Jew before our interview, and you said something interesting about kidney stones and really stuff that deals with kidneys. Now, give me that statistic for the audience that you gave me about kidney stones and how popular they are, really specifically down here in South Florida.
So in general, there's a 1 in 10 risk of having kidney stones at some point during your lifetime, 10%. Down in the Stone Belt, which is the southern part of the United States, especially the southeastern part of the United States, that risk is even higher. A lot of that's due to dehydration, which is probably the biggest risk factor for kidney stone formation, as well as diet as well. So having high oxalate-rich foods can predispose to stone formation risk. But Florida is right in the middle of the Stone Belt, so a much higher risk of having stone disease here.
So high oxalated food, what kind of contains it? For someone like me who doesn't know what that is, what am I eating, Doc?
So it doesn't really follow a pattern, unfortunately,
okay.
But things like spinach and nuts are very high in oxalate. But things that are low in oxalate include kale. So there's not really a pattern, But looking at diagrams online of what high oxalate foods you can avoid is helpful for decreasing stone formation risk in general. But it really depends on like what type of stones you may have formed in the past. It also depends on different urinary abnormalities that you may have. But more than even the diet aspect is drinking lots of fluids.
Yep.
So drinking at least 2.5 to 3 liters of water a day will help decrease your stone risk formation the most. So, I mean, even here, yeah, I bring water with me to the studio, but I try to drink water throughout the day, front load it to the mornings and the afternoons, and then taper it off at night so I'm not waking up at night to urinate.
So, by the way, Dr. Ju, Joshua S. Ju, MD and a urological surgeon with Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm Beach, part of the Palm Beach Health Network, is our guest here on ESPN West Palm today. When I was young, probably like third grade, my dad woke up in the morning, pain, the whole nine yards, ambulance had to come, and it was a kidney stone. And I think from that happening, I've always been the drink water guy. Like, I'm drinking water even when I'm not thirsty because I don't want to do that.
Hydration and, nation.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I set reminders. Alarms will go off. I don't have my Apple Watch on me today because I'm a dodo brain and forgot it at home. But there's like a timer every hour that I have. Hey, drink water. Just so it's there. One of the more excruciating pains, I feel like, you know, we're men, we're babies, you know, we don't deliver babies. We're not superheroes like women, but one of the biggest things, and obviously kidney stones can happen to any of the genders, but like I feel like men, that's like the one thing where it's like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. So I'm trying to avoid that at all costs, Doc.
Good.
I'm trying to avoid that at all costs. But, now we talked about kidneys, we talked about kidney stones. You said you specialize too on the prostate side. Is there anything similar in the prostate that could happen to kidney stones? Is there any diseases that we really need to be on the lookout for when it comes to the prostate, another area of your expertise?
So in general, for people who are not familiar with the prostate, it is how I'd like to explain it, like an orange. So you have the inner part of the orange, the meat of the orange. That's the central zone, the transition zone. That's a lot of the part that will cause obstruction and obstructing urinary symptoms over time, the BPH part, so to speak. And then there's the outer shell of the prostate, the peripheral zone, which is like the rind of the orange. And that's where prostate cancer usually grows if it's there. So two different aspects to the prostate. And they are two separate processes. So over time, just to speak about the urinary side, the prostate tends to enlarge. That's very common with age. It grows inwards and occludes that area, obstructs that area where you urinate. So a lot of men can have bothersome urinary symptoms, which are more common with age. Getting up at night to urinate, some straining to urinate, slow stream, feeling like your bladder is incompletely empty, urgency. So when you feel the need to urinate, you have to go run to the bathroom.
Right.
So a lot of that early on is more quality of life, things that can be optimized with medications. But then as that progresses and the obstruction worsens, then there can be permanent or irreversible bladder remodeling because the bladder is above the prostate. That's what stores the urine. And there can be collagen deposition or basically remodeling of the bladder to accommodate. And the bladder is like a pump. It squeezes to empty the urine. And when you start having those changes over time, it can damage the bladder, lead to urinary tract infections, blood in the urine, kidney damage. That's when it becomes more of a need to address that obstructing prostate tissue.
So what kind of degrades the prostate? What do you need to stay away from? What's some steps you could take to not have something like that happen?
Unfortunately, a lot of it's genetic in terms of prostate enlargement, but metabolic syndrome, that's like diabetes, obesity, those are all things that can accelerate prostate growth. But overall, there's some men that will always have a normal-sized prostate. There's other men who have gigantic prostates at younger ages that continue to grow. There's no reason to treat a prostate based on its size or enlargement on its own. However, when you start having very bothersome symptoms, that's usually the first sign that maybe their quality of life can be improved by either some medications or minimally invasive surgical options.
Now, Doc, last thing here before we go to the sports portion of the interview. It says here in Manhattan, You created a novel. Tell us a little bit about the novel that and these are doctor terms, so bear with me. Minimally invasive surgical technique for tumors of the urinary tract lining of the kidney and ureter.
Correct.
So explain this novel to me and where I could find it and support it.
So unfortunately, it's not a novel that you read on Kindle. I think they just cut off my description where it was a new surgical technique that I developed with my mentor up in Manhattan. So just a little bit about my mentor. Very cool guy. He grew up in New York,
yep.
Manhattan, and then went to medical school in Greece. And then
His
free time, he took out a loan, and then he would competitively race throughout Europe using different go-karts and started to move up the racing rankings because he wanted to maybe be like an F1, F2, F3 driver
sure.
one day. So he used to be a medical student while competitively racing throughout Europe.
Oh, wow.
And we hit it off. We have very similar personalities. He's a very active guy. He's in his 60s. He windsurfs now.
Jeez.
He plays tennis every day. He's a very active guy, but more than that, a gentleman, a great surgeon. But in regards to the surgery that we created together, basically it was using the different cameras and lasers that were advancements in stone disease with tumors of the upper urinary tract. So that means basically the kidneys are above. That's what makes the urine. The ureters are the tubes that connect the kidneys to the bladder. The bladder is what stores the urine.
Right.
You can get some tumors of that lining, that urinary lining of the kidneys and ureters. So this patient of his had a very large tumor. It was about a 3-centimeter tumor. Just for reference, a normal kidney is around 12 centimeters. So it was like 3 centimeters, obstructing his kidney, part of the urinary tract lining. So in the past, for large bulky tumors like that, the treatment was a radical nephroureterectomy, which in English means removing the whole kidney and ureter surgically. So that leads to chronic kidney disease. It's a large operation, a lot of risk involved. What I decided to do with Dr. Armanakis, my mentor, was go up with the very small cameras through the urinary tract, no incisions or wounds, visualize the tumor, use lasers that are 200 microns in diameter. That's a fifth of the diameter, the fifth of a 1 millimeter marker on a ruler.
Jeez.
So that's how small that laser is. And then core out the tumor from underneath. So coming underneath the tumor and then remove it. So that had two, and we filmed that.
And instead of getting rid of the kidney, you're going right to the source and being able to not do the whole take the kidney out.
Correct. So
it's
nice because it's both diagnostic and therapeutic, yeah. meaning that we're able to sample greater amounts of tissue that way mm-hmm. so we can accurately grade and stage what that tumor is.
Right.
Grade is how aggressive the tumor biology is and if it even is cancer. And then stage how deeply it invades
okay.
because that really necessitates and helps guide the treatment options, the grade and stage. A limitation before was they would go up with these rudimentary cameras or poor quality cameras and go up with stone baskets and try to take tissue. But some of the non-diagnostic rates were in the 20, 30, up to 40% where it was being either not diagnosed or improperly diagnosed on those prior biopsy techniques. So mm-hmm. this technique basically receives a lot of the tissue, removes a large part, if not the whole tumor, and then also samples the deeper layer, which really guides the treatment, whether you may need chemotherapy, whether you may need your whole kidney and ureter removed,
mm-hmm.
or if that endoscopic treatment without any incisions, no wounds, and you go home the same day, if that is the definitive treatment for it in some cases. And there's been a few patients down here who I've seen with very large tumors of their ureter. Well, one patient in particular, I remember his wife had actually found me on the internet.
Wow.
Traveled down to come see me. His tumor was 55 millimeters in length. That's very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because normal is about like 5 millimeters.
Yep.
But 55 millimeters was this gentleman's, obstructing his whole kidney. And there was great x-rays that we took of two separate laser treatments to establish that he had low-grade disease, meaning that his tumor biology was not aggressive, so we can continue with those treatments. And then ultimately ended up opening his whole urinary tract, so wasn't obstructed anymore, and ablating and removing all of the tumor. Jeez. So, and he's gone home every day, the same day after those surgeries. Now he just has a ureteral stent, a temporary plastic hollow tube in there. We never did any incisions. He never had any sutures or wounds. So it's been nice to bring that technology here. It's been something that we're proud of. And we've shared that at national conferences with other urologists to help show that technique, show that it's possible.
Paving the way, baby.
Exactly.
Paving the way. Dr. Joshua S. Chu, a urological surgeon with the Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm Beach, part of the Palm Beach Health Network. Now, you just heard Dr. Chu say, you know, people come out and they seek him. I mean, if you got kidney issues, prostate issues, anything that Dr. Chu really specializes in, go on the website, palmbeachhealthnetwork.com. You could go to you could call their phone number, 561-655-5511, and that address is 1309 North Flagler Drive, West Palm Beach, Florida. So, you know, Dr. Chu, certainly one of the more accomplished doctors we've had on here on ESPN West Palm today. He is also accomplished in his sports fandom. The Miami Hurricanes, diehard Hurricane fan. Now, Dr. Chu, I don't think I've talked to you since the season ended last year. You had a great one with Cam Ward, but final three games of the season, partner, losing two out of three, missing a chance to go to the college football playoff. Now, I like Miami's odds this year. I think they are the second best team easily in that ACC conference.
Oh, wow. Good.
I think it's Clemson and then Miami. Now, Florida State, it's truly a rebuilding year, I think, for them again after winning two games. A lot of people are hooting and hollering a bit about SMU. But I don't know how much you know about Carson Beck. He was the quarterback for Georgia. Now he's transferring out over. Similar to last year, how Cam Ward, you know, Carson Beck, one of the top transfer quarterbacks, going to be playing for Miami this year. Are you excited for your Hurricanes?
Exactly. Yeah, I think Cristobal is bringing a lot of expertise back to this area. You know, I think they did very well last year. It's a shame how the season ended, just missing out, like you said, on the playoffs at the end. But, you know, that's part of the growth process. Cam Ward is doing well in the preseason in the NFL. We'll see what Carson Beck can do this year at quarterback. They still have a fair amount of returning players. So, I'm hoping that they could still bring some of the expertise from last year into this year. When looking at their schedule, unfortunately, they start off with a hard game with Notre Dame, who's ranked obviously higher than they are in the polls, which, you know, you always expect Notre Dame to bring their best, and they're an established program that has been doing well. They did very well last year. They have young leadership over there.
Yep.
But I think that their schedule after that isn't too bad. That being said, seeing like repeats of like the Catholics and the convicts is great. Yeah. And it's an amazing way to start off a season.
Right. Now, Dr. Chu, when were you at Miami? What years were you there?
I was there in medical school. So that was 2014 to 2018. When I was like 22 years old is when I was living in Brickell. Yeah. And graduated when I was 26. It was great.
So that schedule, it's Notre Dame, and then the top games after that, Florida at Hard Rock Stadium. You're going to be going?
Definitely.
Yeah, Florida at Hard Rock Stadium, September 20th, at Florida State the week after. So the two Florida teams, September 20th and October 4th. So actually, I believe, yeah, bye week and then Florida State. So Florida, bye week, and then Florida State. So to get rid of the rivals that early on in the season, I think is something pretty good. And then SMU November 1. Those are the games to note for Dr. Chu's Hurricanes. But I don't know, that Notre Dame game. Listen, I think he got the better quarterback. I think the question with Notre Dame, after Angelini transferred to Syracuse, who just got announced a starter over there, by the way, I think the one thing Miami has is the quarterback, and that's very, very important. Now, you're a Raider fan as well. Geno Smith this year got him from Seattle. Obviously, new head coach, a whole lot of new there with the Raiders. You expecting, you know, I personally, you know, Tom Brady all the way at the top of the ownership too. I think this is a perfect storm right now for the Raiders to maybe surprise a couple of people in the NFL.
I think so too. I mean, that's the hope. So, like you said, Tom Brady at the top with the management. You have Pete Carroll, who I loved watching him at USC. Mm-hmm. I liked watching him with the Seahawks. He was obviously very close with Marshawn Lynch too. And then now you have Chip Kelly too, who is like a legend in Oregon. So I think they have good management, and I think their coaching choices in the past have been mediocre or a little bit questionable. Geno Smith, I know, has bounced around between a lot of different NFL teams, but, you know, in the preseason, he's looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. He seems like he's calm in the pocket. He can make his passes well. I think you have a lot of young talent there. So Brock Bowers, a star standout last year.
I mean, one of the best rookie tight ends I've ever seen. Statistically, right. One of the best seasons we've ever seen at the position.
Statistically, yeah. He had some of the most yards as a rookie tight end. That's very promising.
Ashton Jeanty, the new running back from Boise State. There's a lot to be excited
about. That's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah.
Jeanty just stiff-armed and bulldozed the 49ers player like early on in that game recently. I mean, I think there's a lot of talent. Jeanty's so athletic, too. He does backflips. I mean, he not only can he run over people, but he can jump over people. He's agile. And then obviously Max Crosby on the defensive side brings the veteran wisdom and the skill set to there. So I think they are well balanced. We'll ultimately have to see how things end up playing out in the full season, because obviously the main starters aren't playing often and it's always hard to gauge.
Right.
But I think it's promising.
And it's a tough division too. You know, the Broncos, the Chiefs and the Chargers, those are, that's Sean Payton, that's Andy Reid. And listen, I'm an Ohio State guy. I can't stand Jim Harbaugh. Cheater. Anyway. three Hall of Fame coaches, arguably. So, but you got a Hall of Fame coach yourself with Pete Carroll. Certainly a lot of things around Geno Smith. And I don't think you get Pete Carroll if you're not trying to win games next year. So no. I think it's a good step forward for the Raiders. Now, Dr. Ju, we appreciate you joining us here on ESPN West Palm today. I want to tell everyone to go to palmbeachhealthnetwork.com. And if you actually go to the Find Doctor page, Dr. Ju is one of the first that pops up. Urology, he's with the Urology Medical Associates, Palm Beach Health Network Physician Group. Once again, that address, 1411 North Flagler Drive, West Palm Beach, Florida. So if you got prostate issues, kidney issues, Dr. Ju is our guy here. And Dr. Ju, we appreciate you joining ESPN West Palm today.
Thanks so much, Mike.
We're coming right back on ESPN 106.3.